Welcome to the Sons of Technology Clubhouse. Ditch your fear at the door, take a risk, and enjoy the ride with your hosts, Joe Marquez and Kyle Anderson.
Welcome, everybody, to another fantastic episode of the podcast by the Sons of Technology. Today, we have a topic that has been gestating in our to-do list for a very long time, and the topic is esports. Now, to some of you out there, that may, you know, have the hair stand up on the back of your neck because you're like, yes, I love gaming, I love esports. Others, you may be saying, what is that? While still others may be going, oh, not this again, right? That's not a sport. But we have to talk about it because it is one of the fastest growing activities that is happening, that happened during the pandemic, but is continuing to happen on campuses. And getting to know what it is and the ideas behind it and the drives behind it and the student engagement behind it is incredibly important if you want to understand the ins and outs of esports. So that is what we're going to be talking about today. But before we get to that, let's go ahead and introduce ourselves. So I am Joe Marquez. I am currently the Director of Academic Innovation for Q, which, by the way, is having a face-to-face, fully immersive conference in Palm Springs, California, March 17th to 19th. So if you have not signed up yet, please go to q.org/spring and sign up today. There is going to be a giant esports arena at Q, one of the largest rooms in the convention center has been turned into an esports arena. So if you want to see what that looks like, come down and check it out. Enough pandering about Spring Q, definitely go. But as always, my partner in innovation, Kyle Anderson. Kyle, please introduce yourself.
I am Kyle Anderson. I am a special education teacher in Las Vegas, Nevada. You can find me on Twitter at AndersonEdTech. Same thing with the Instagram. I have a neglected blog at AndersonEdTech.net. And then I am also the author of To the Edge, Successes and Failures Through Risk Taking. You can find that on Amazon, barnesandnoble.com, and through my publisher, EduMatch Publishing. And it will be featured at Spring Q during the Meet the Author session, as well as this show and my other podcast, the Beer EDU podcast, during the Meet the Podcaster session, which there will be hundreds of great sessions, but those will definitely be ones that will not be missed if you are interested in podcasting or books. So, but we also have with us a couple of returning members of the EdTech Army. Always had great having these two gentlemen with us. I'm going to allow Roland to introduce himself. Roland, go ahead and tell us about yourself, please.
Thanks, Kyle. My name is Roland Chidiac. I'm currently a re-engagement teacher in Waterloo, Ontario, Canada. And I'm loving that you guys want to talk about esports because I've entered into esports from a primary education position. So before I became a re-engagement teacher, I was teaching grade three, and I was that teacher that was bothered. Why are the older kids get to do esports? Why is this a high school thing? I want to bring this to primary. I want to bring this to grade one, two, and three. And so I started working on that. And then I switched out and moved into this re-engagement role, but I have found a home for esports in the re-engagement role. And it's doing all kinds of awesome things for me as a re-engagement teacher, building relationships with students. So I'm hoping I get to talk a little bit about that. And I can't wait to hear like really deep esports stuff from my main man, Bradford.
Yeah, Bradford, definitely introduce yourself because yeah, you are an esports guru.
Well, thank you for the introduction. I'm Bradford Harris. I am from the great state of Texas. I always say that because I say it with love. I love all my people from Texas. I am an education strategist with SHI. I also serve as the director of learning for our nonprofit TechSEF, Texas Scholastic Esports Federation. And I'm also a member or actually a mentor for NASEF, North America Scholastic Esports Federation. So I've been actually, before I left my district, I did a pilot for esports before I kind of got snatched away from for SHI for doing what I love now. So I talk esports, digital learning, STEM, all that, across the United States.
Excellent. And we definitely are here to hear some ideas on how to get esports off the ground and convince some of the upper administrators on why esports is important. But let's real quickly define what esports is, right? Because you know, when people hear it, they just think it's gaming. Oh, you're just letting the kids game, right? And so we have to then define what a sport is, right? Because you have some people say, well, esports isn't a sport, right? Some people say, it's not a sport unless you sweat. Well, I mean, is bowling a sport? Because I've never sweat during bowling, but is bowling a sport, right? Depending on the weather, you know, I haven't sweated when I golfed, right? So, you know, what is a sport, right? So to me, definition of a sport is anything that can create competition and ultimately have a winner. That's a sport, right? So to me, chess is a sport. It is, because you have two people competing, and in the end, there is a winner. Hacky sack, okay? It could be a sport, right? Who can hacky the sack more times in a row than anybody else, right? You may not want to define it as a sport, but in my definition of a sport, it's whenever you have two individuals or two teams going against each other, points are accumulated, and a winner is given, right? So that means... maybe sometimes soccer isn't a sport, because I guess at the end there isn't always a winner in soccer. But soccer is a sport. I hear people moaning and groaning, especially Adam Juarez, who loves soccer. But esports is just sports being competed on an electronic device. That's basically it, right? And so I would say, in my mind, esports goes all the way back to the Donkey Kong era, when you'd have people competing against who can get the highest score in Donkey Kong, right? That goes all the way back there. There's been esports in Nintendo for the longest time. They made an entire movie about esports back in the 80s called The Wizard, right? The Wizard with one of the Wonder Years guys, you know?
Savage.
I mean?
But
yeah. Savage. I mean, so esports has been around for a long time. It just didn't equate into a sport that can be done at school. But here's the thing. Here's my pitch, right, about esports. Because when I started learning about esports back in 2017, 2018, I was just like, this is never going to fly, because we always hear this one word. I've heard it for a long time because I use a lot of computers in my classroom. Screen time. Well, how much screen time are you giving your students? How much screen time is this? How much screen time? And my response back is, screen time is really only defined when you have passive viewing of material. When they're actively doing something, I wouldn't consider that screen time. When they're actively creating, actively engaging, to me, that's not necessarily screen time, right? When you're watching Netflix and binging it for 12 hours straight, yes, that's screen time, okay? But my pitch to people was this. You have students that come to your school that don't feel a part of that school. And you always have administrators that say, well, you just have to engage in the extracurricular. You just have to find a club. You just have to do this. Engage more. Well, they may not want to play football or soccer or badminton, right? Or frisbee golf. They may not want to go out there and do that. They may not want to do one of the other arts like band or choir or strings, orchestra. They may not want to do that. Maybe their love is gaming. And why? Because maybe they feel more comfortable talking to a stranger to complete a common goal than talking to a person next to them where they don't feel connected. So how can you create the connections and the modality that they already make connections? By creating a team on campus where you now have people who are not strangers, but teammates connecting with other schools competing for the same kind of goal. To me, that is the crux of why esports is important. It's to engage students, to get them to feel that they have a stakehold on the campus and that they can be applauded for a skill that somebody else does not have. And I always would pitch this to administrators. Can you imagine a student who has always had their head down, or has always tried to hide or always tried to blend into the crowd, not stand out because they just don't want to be there, walking around with a Letterman jacket, with a gaming controller, and then somebody like a football player saying, hey, I saw your match last night at the esports arena. Fantastic job, my man. That is great. You're so awesome. Imagine the spirits that get lifted up for that individual kid. Now imagine they want to come to school now. Now imagine they feel a part of the school. Now imagine they feel they have worth in the school. Instead of taking all that talent to their home, locking themselves in their room, and really disengaging from that face-to-face or team kind of mentality, still feeling alone, right? That's always been my pitch. So I want to hear from the group, is that pitch kind of your crux, your idea of why, at least at the base, esports should exist? And then let's expound upon it to go beyond just playing video games on what esports can truly mean as a team building event.
You know, you're 100% spot on without all that preaching, because I don't preach like you preach. you're reaching kids who aren't in those areas, and that's very important. They are looking for a sense of belonging. We're talking about, Roland, you said it, like, you know, high school is a very crucial time for kids, and I notice it when I look at my own kids, that they're looking at, where do I belong? Do I belong in band? That ain't for me. Do I belong in cheerleading? That's not for me. And I'm sorry to age myself, but like, that's such a 90s, 80s mentality. Like, I got to fit into this mold, or I got to be in this mold. You know, like, think about like when you look at what's that movie, Mean Girls, or whatever those movies are, where you've got to fit into this group. Well, now, okay, if you're a high school kid or elementary kid or a middle school kid, you already got to be in a group, and they're trying to figure out, okay, where do I belong? Where do I fit in? And that's so hard for a student. That is terribly hard. And coming up, these kids are already gaming literally when they're 1, 2, 3 years old. They've already found something to connect with already. And so they want to bring that into the school. And so they're already collaborating. They're already communicating with people that are like them that they haven't ever seen. And so you have students who want to be leaders. These aren't adults who say, "Hey, Mr. Marquez, I want to do esports, and I'm an adult. I'm a teacher in math, and I want to do this." No, these are student leaders who want to step up. And what do you say to a student who wants to do this, who has those organization skills, or may not, but wants to have those organizational skills, and you tell them, "Oh, no, we're not doing that." Now you're telling me that I want to develop a group of kids that feel like they don't belong, so they do belong. And I want them to compete, and I want them to have good communication and collaboration skills. That's what sport, like you said, Joe, that's what sports is. Funny enough, and I pulled it up as you were talking, something told me to look up the Olympics last night. And so I'm looking, and you're talking about defining sports, and it just dawned on me, like, did y'all know they you can medal in breakdancing? Did y'all know that? I had no clue. There's handball, there's judo, there's luge, there's football, there's figure skating. Well, of course, we know figure skating and all that kind of stuff, curling. But, like, there's all of these things that are coming down the pipe. Esports is coming, too, to the Olympics. So I think they said 2022. They're going to try something. So if it's coming out there, what does it look like in the mainstream? You've got to acknowledge it. It's here. You're acknowledging it. So, I just said that to say that it just popped in my head. And I had to get that out. But it is a sense of belonging for kids. They want to be a part of something. They want to bring something from the real world into their school because it's important to them. And to knock it off because they see it as, quote, a waste of time. But when you actually sit down with the kid and you see the work that they put into it, oh my God, it's work. My kids, they're 20 and 18 now, so they're asleep. But the work that they put into to collaborating and playing games, it's in awe. You see every content area in, say, I'll say a League of Legends game, or whatever game that they're playing, you see it all. You see SEL, you see it all. And you can start that. Now, I know we'll get into it, but you can start that literally the next day, depending on what device that you have. But I'll let Roland go ahead and chime in as well. Go ahead, Roland.
Thanks, Bradford. I appreciate that. My perspective, so you and Joe hit upon a lot of things that I would love to go deeper into, but I think I'm going to try to keep it as general as possible. So, being a lover of video games, the whole esports thing is not a stretch for me. You know, the only thing that bothers me is that I'm not in those spaces, in the high school spaces and in the intermediate spaces where I work, where that stuff is more common and people seem to buy in more at that level. So being someone who loves gaming, being someone who's interested in esports, being a primary school teacher, I was like, this isn't cool. Like, I want to bring some of my love to my classroom and the kids I work with. And like you said, all these kids are at home doing this anyway, right? So my students are at home. Well, my former students are at home playing video games, doing all kinds of things. Why can't I take that love and some of them, their feelings of not belonging with anything at school, and then bringing that to school and making it something formal where kids can see themselves more at school and feel like they belong and feel like they're included because people are acknowledging what they love and what they do that has never really been acknowledged before in a formal way. That is huge. And what I have found is I've leaned on bringing that in and connecting it to school. So I'll give you a quick example. So because I'm working with little kids, you know, I have to find a way. I have to find a way to make sure that everybody's good, that my principal's okay with it, that the parents are good with it too, because it is additional screen time, right? And I was doing it at recess, so it was taking away from being outside a little bit. So I wanted to make sure I was balancing out and making sure that I was being transparent, but that I had things behind me to support what it is that I wanted to do and why I believe it's important for the kids to engage in it. So there was, I connected a lot of the stuff I did with my grade threes to the global competencies, you know, talking about creativity, collaboration, critical thinking. I was rolling that in so that not only were they playing and competing against each other, but we were talking about creativity. We were talking about critical thinking. We were talking about communication and how we could get better at all those things using esport. So now fast forward, I'm out of the classroom now. I'm working one-on-one with many kids from grade 7 to 12. 90% of the kids I meet and work with love gaming. In fact, it's become an issue for them because they're staying up all night playing video games. Next morning comes, guess what? They don't want to get up and shower and go to school. In comes Roland, you got to work with this kid. We got to get them engaged in school. How are we going to do it? And so I decided, you know what, their love for gaming, my love for gaming, let's make it part of what we do together. So I got myself a Nintendo Switch and I started introducing games to the kids. And, you know, it's my way of honoring who they are and honoring who I am. Listen, I get you're having a hard time with school. Let's do some gaming. Let's compete. And then let's start talking about school. So I'll enter into your world and then you enter into mine. And what I have found is that this love that we both have, this thing that's getting in their way, I'm now using it to my advantage to show them that it doesn't have to get in the way. You can still have what you love to do and you can balance that out with a little bit of school so that you can do some formal learning and that's going to help you along the road of your life. And so that's kind of where I'm at now. But I was, the only time I was really in a space where I didn't belong was when my school entered into this program called Girls Who Game. And it was sponsored by Dell Technologies. And what we were doing was taking girls in grade 6 to 8 and using Minecraft to help them solve problems and work on real life problems using that and competing against other teams in Canada and the United States. So I was like, if you could imagine in the middle of this whole COVID thing, that was my Super Bowl. Like I looked forward to spending my lunch with these girls and with the other coaches because there were no other extracurriculars happening because nobody could be with each other. But we could do this Girls Who Game program because it just worked. We had technology, we had the space, and it got me through most of that COVID time. So there's another layer for you as well.
You know, Joe, you hit on something too, and I got to get it out of my head before I forget. The screen time, I'm going to put that actually in my notes because we haven't truly defined until you did it. You just did it, the screen time, and parents, educators, everybody's worried about, well, screen time. And you just said it, like, are you a consumer of it? Or are you a creator of it? There's a difference. think about when you're walking through the classroom, we're all ed tech, digital, whatever. So, okay, you're worried about screen time, but you have a panel, you have an interactive panel in your room. You have three or four computers in your room, and you have mobile devices in your room. And the minute the child walks off the bus, they've already used the mobile device. So what is your definition of screen time? Because they've been on a screen and since the minute they've woken up in the morning, and then you have something on the panel where they've got to look at a screen. Then they've got to go on a computer and do some type of testing that they've been on the screen. And if they're one of those typical intervention students, they got to do some intervention practice work where they've been on a screen. So they've been doing screen time for the whole entire day. So I'm only coming in and I'm saying I want them to be active in something. I want them to create. I want them to collaborate. I want them to respond in another space. So that I think when they're asking for screen time, I'm with you, Joe. Okay, define screen time, because let's go into a typical classroom, whether it's the greatest teacher in the world or the worst teacher in the world, whoever, whatever you define that is. And now look at all the screens that you have in this room that we've purchased. And I love EdTech. I love digital learning just as much as the next person. But if you're saying too much screen time, look at all of us in our offices right now. I mean, I'm probably a poster child, and Joe, you're probably a poster child for it too. I got screens all over the place. So how much screen time is that? We have to be active creators within that space. We can't just sit there and be like, what's that old Super Bowl commercial from 1984 where you're just sitting there like this? If you're just sitting there like this or binge watching, You're not getting anything out of it. If you're not having your students be active with that screen being on, having critical conversations, having them work out something, having them, and I'll just say code, they don't have to code anything, but just being creative while that screen is being on, then they are going to sit there and just stare at a screen all day long. That's a very, very good point, Joe, when we're talking to our administrators and our parents and our adults, because we have to clearly define what that is. When I'm looking at my kids and they're playing, like, I will stop by, I'll just go by the room and just stare. And yes, they're on the screen. The first glance you see as an adult, oh my God, they're playing a game. But you take a step back and I'm listening to vocabulary. I'm listening to them taking some critical notes. Now, it's not school notes, but like they're looking at like, oh my God, how can I make myself better? I need to take some notes down for this. I'm going into YouTube or I'm going into Twitch because I can't beat this part of the level. And I'm looking at this particular player on how they're accomplishing that level. And I'm taking that notes down. And like my daughter, she journals on certain tactics that she has to do. And I'm just like, I'm blown away because this is everything that we're asking students to do on every single content area, but they're doing it within, let's say, 20 minutes, but we're not asking them to do it. So again, Joe, I'm glad that you said the screen time, because I never thought about looking at it from that perspective. I should have, but now that's very important. Define screen time for me. What does that mean when I'm going into your classroom? Do you have all of these things in your classroom? Yes. Okay, so now define screen time.
I think it's also important not only to distinguish what is screen time, because, you know, Bradford, like you said, I mean, the moment that kids are up, whether it's a TV at home before they leave, they get to school, they're on a Chromebook, they're on an iPad, whatever it may be, all day long, it's screens. But the other concern is that a lot of people will say is, and I'm one of these people, is just general physical activity. So because of all these screens, there's a concern with kids that are just not being physically active. And I have this fight with my six-year-old that, you know, he's an active kid. I'm not 100% concerned that all of a sudden, like, he's not going to be healthy because he's not getting out and being active. No, he's in the backyard doing stuff, and he plays hockey, and he gets on his bike and different things. So I'm not concerned with him. But at the same time, though, there are days where, especially if my wife and I get busy, he will literally be sitting on his Switch for sometimes hours on end. And that's partly our fault because, you know, we get busy and we're not paying attention, whatever. But then it also becomes with him, and I'm sure other kids, it's the same way. When you tell them it's time to get off it, then it's the fight to give it up, where, like, oh, just a couple more minutes. No, no, it's time to get done now. And then you go to take it away, and then it becomes a fight and a fit and yelling and screaming and everything. Again, I'm not 100% concerned at this point about him not being physically active, but I know there's kids out there where that can be the concern. So for those that may bring this up to you, and I'm going to direct this to you, Bradford, because you're so well-versed in this, what is your response to that, to a parent or a teacher that brings that up as part of the argument against this?
So then I have to ask myself, and this is kind of where I've talked to Joe on the side of this, not necessarily gaming, but just health in general. What is your plan before they've turned on that device? What have you done that actively before the device has been turned on? That's very important. If you haven't had those critical conversations with your kid, no matter if they're 8 or 80, because let's be real, 80-year-olds, we all game. And even in my space right now that I'm working from home, like, I'm still dealing with issues of, okay, like, how do I navigate sitting down all day and not being active? Because I haven't gamed, but I'm on computers talking with people all day long, and I haven't been active. So I have to ask myself, okay, before I start turning on a game, how have I been active? What kind of stretches can I do? How can I make sure the screen is dim? How can I make sure that I have, you know, 30 minutes of just doing something else? Those are the plans that I have. Even my daughter, who's 20, she'll say, like, you know, I don't even game that long. Like, you know, I'll do like a good maybe 2 hours, then I'll switch to go and do something else. And then I'll switch to do something else. And then I'll switch to do something else. And it's about training your brain to be active into other things. And so those are critical conversations that I think we need to have with our students and with our parents and with our teachers, because healthy gaming is important. What are you putting into your body? What are you doing physically before you turn on the switch? Again, looking at your space. I know NASF talks about this too. What is your space like before you start gaming? Have you as a parent, as an educator, have those conversations with, all right, before you turn on this game, what things have you done before you got started? What things are you going to do afterwards? Because when it's time to turn that game off, here are my expectations. And it's going to be, I'm not going to say that it's going to be easy, because it's going to be rough. But when you keep laying down those expectations on what you're supposed to do before doing it afterward, it's going to get better. It's going to get better. The healthy eating habits. Okay. Let's talk about what's in the household. That's a trigger. So yeah, I mean, we're going to stereotype the gamer right now, the chips, the cakes, the Dr. Pepper and all that kind of stuff that's there. Yeah, that's typical. But okay, what else are you putting into the household? What foods are there to make sure that your child is eating right? So if they're going to game, all right, here's your bottle of water. Here are some grapes. You know, you can be on here for like 30 minutes. And then I need you to do something else. Like, set some goals. So while they're setting goals for their gaming, as an adult, we need to set goals before, during, and after for them. I know Roland wanted to say he wanted to chime in.
Thanks, Bradford. I just wanted to say that in terms of screen time and, you know, being transparent and supportive of students and parents and administrators, I was hyper aware of, okay, if I'm going to do, like, so my message to the parents and to my administrators was that we will find balance. So it might not be balanced Monday and Wednesday, but if you look at the week, it will be balanced. The time that the kids spend inside doing the e-sport, they will have time to be out. They will have time to be breathing in the fresh air and playing soccer and running around and stuff like that. In terms of the eating, you know, in an elementary school, any teacher will tell you that they're going to get their kids what they need. In my school, we had nutrition for learning. So there's always food around, nutritious food. And so all day, you know, as a teacher, I'm making sure kids are eating their foods. They're getting nutritious stuff into them. But I think the big picture from my perspective was always telling the people, the adults responsible for the kids, that yes, we are going to be spending time on the screen. And it goes back to, with my esports, with the primary kids, we were going to be connecting to the global competency. So it's not just these kids consuming all this stuff in front of the screen. There was going to be thinking involved. There's going to be reflection involved. There's going to be preparation. It's just like any team sport. I even let them wear jerseys, right? You wear your jersey, you sit with your teammate, you go do your thing. Like any sport, there needs to be balance, or at least that's been my opinion going into it. With any gaming I've done, being aware of the screen, even with my re-engagement kids, I'm going to be with you for an hour today. We're going to game for 15, and then for 45, it's going to be numeracy or literacy. You get to choose, but there needs to be a balance, because if you just go home and say, I'm just playing video games, well, I mean, that's not appropriate for school. So
right.
For me, it was, at the end of the day, it will equal out, but there's good stuff going on in front of that screen. It's not just sitting there like a zombie playing video games.
You know, I want to say this real quick, because it's very important. It's all into how you approach being a coach to your esports team, right? Yes. And you have to see what other coaches are doing to ensure that you have a well-rounded program. And you have to be able to dispel the idea that all these kids are doing is going into this room and playing video games, because that's not the case. So. Right. Many colleges actually have, when they have an esports team, they have a physical component to it. Not only for team building, they'll do physical things for team building and trust, but also they look at the research. And I know a fellow EdTech Army member and PE teacher and listener, Chris Babb, will back me up on this. Research has shown that when students engage in 20 minutes of rigorous exercise before a mental task, they do better than just entering the mental task without exercise. And so you'll see a lot of esports teams go out for the first half an hour doing rigorous exercises, whether it's jump roping, jogging, even playing a game of tag outside with each other to get that juices flowing. Then they come in and then they game, because the blood is flowing and the mental awareness is there. And in esports, you need that mental awareness. So there is supposed to be a physical portion to all practices. So that needs to be embedded. But also we have to dispel the idea that all the kids are doing is playing video games. They are strategizing. Okay. So there are in any sport, there are various team members who don't necessarily play that sport. In football, a team is not just made up of the players. You have the coaches, the position coaches. You have the social media aspect of the team. You have the mental aspect of the team. You have the physical aspect of the team. You have so many different members of this team that are not on the field, but they make the team work. So in an esports program, you need to have members that are doing the research. If you know you're playing Bay Valley High, in your next meet, you're going to go and find them on Twitch and research what their tactics are in your Rocket League. You're going to find the tendencies. Oh, this guy's always hiding over here. They always knock the ball to him and then he scores. They're looking at the tendencies, and then you have somebody whiteboarding that. Okay, look, we're going to be playing Bay Valley next week. This is the Rocket League play field. These are some of their favorite plays, because most people think it's just button pushing and just by happenstance, they're in a certain spot. But no, they are practicing actual routines to get some common goals happening. So if you can identify those tendencies, you can overcome those tendencies and win the game, right? And so you have these researchers who then present to the team and then go in and try and replicate those tendencies so they can block those or identify them. There's lots of different facets to it. And last thing before I want another person to jump in here is, you have members of the team that run your Twitch channel, right? They're not necessarily the people who are playing, but they are learning how to edit media. They are learning how to do voiceovers. They're learning how to cut things together and present it. They are learning how to manage your social media presence as a team. and social media management and marketing is one of the number one fastest growing wants of any businesses. They want people to know how to run social media, how to market, and how to create that presence online. And those are some of the highest hired people out of college in that marketing aspect. So there's a lot of great things happening in esports. So you have to dispel the idea that esports is just about kids sitting in a chair playing a video game. You have to dispel that in order to truly unpeel what esports programs are supposed to be. And once you unpeel that, so much is possible.
You do. And one thing too that you have to realize too is you have to realize there are only about 5 to 6 kids who are going to be playing the game, but you have 24 kids, a total of 30 kids that are coming into your club or program at the end of the day. What are you doing with those other kids? So I think people have this preconceived notion of, okay, for some Mr. Roland has 30 consoles, 30 computers, 30 PCs in this room. All they're doing is sitting in gaming. Well, that's the struggle that's real. I wish, educators wish they could have that. That's another conversation. But there's only 6 people who are actually gaming at that time. So you have to, like you said, Joe, you have to strategize. Well, what are the other kids doing? One of my friends, Chris Aviles, I don't know if you guys know him or not, but he's from Garden State Esports. He walked us through an amazing, in like, let's say 15 minutes, on what that would look like. Coming in, we're all stretching. We're all having like an SEL moment. How was your day? What goals do you want to accomplish today? Like, he did it within 5 minutes. And I asked him, I said, well, wait a minute, are you treating this like class? Said, no, you're not treating this like class. You just come in and we're stretching, we're having conversations, we're getting ready for the day, just like how you would when kids coming into your math class. And I said, okay. And here's the other structure. We're talking Rocket League, for example. Kids are playing and we have a coach. I said, well, is the teacher a coach? Not necessarily. A student can be the coach. But what if the student doesn't know Rocket League? It doesn't matter. It's what they're seeing. So if Roland has never played Rocket League before, think about, we were just talking about before we recorded this about all the games that you guys go to, okay? We may not be the expert 100%, but we know what we see. So then we talk about, okay, how can we make their gaming better? Here's what I saw. Okay, Roland, you did this, 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 this. Okay, let's talk about how we can make that better. Okay, you need to make sure that you move your car over here, because I think if you moved your car over here and then this turn over here, that would have made that better. We need to practice that. And that's just what the coach is seeing. Think about, isn't that what we do as teachers in the classroom as well? Here is what I saw. Here's what I think you could improve. Let me not say better, improve, because if you say better, people are like, oh my God, who do you think you are? But but those are those type of coaches. Then you have the other kids who are helping with the marketing, with the Twitch, with fundraising. Hey, we got to keep this program running. How are we going to keep this program running so we can come back tomorrow, next week? How is this going to work? You know, we got to look at how our Discord or our Twitch is running. We got to look at our website. We got to look at other things. How's our shirts coming? All of those things kids are doing to making sure that the club is running. And all you're doing as an adult is you're just being the facilitator in the conversation. Oh my God, it is exactly like the rotation blended learning that we're always talking about in ed tech and in all these classes. It runs itself. Yes, you got to build up to it, but it's there. It's happening, and other kids are having that voice and being a part of it. And so, yes, again, Rocket League is what's happening with those 6 kids. There's a coach talking about that. Maybe you have a team huddle to see what was going on. But there's other roles in the ecosystem that have to be addressed and that have to have leadership in them in order for it to happen. So that's very important for parents and educators to understand. No, Roland is not having 30 computers where they're all gaming, or he's not asking for all the kids to bring a Switch or their Xbox or their PlayStation to come and game, because that's ineffective. That's not going to work. We need other people to help our program run. And yes, that can be put into, here's another conversation for our high school people. That can start building your portfolio and your LinkedIn. We hadn't talked about that yet, but that's starting to say, okay, in my high school organization, in my program, I learned how to run a tournament. I learned how to organize it. I learned how to coach. I learned how to stream. I learned how to market. Wait a minute, did you learn how to game? Oh, no, I don't do the gaming part yet. I game a little bit. But literally, that's what companies are looking for. They're looking for those people. Yes, the gaming is great. It's wonderful. It's glamorous. It's sexy. It's great. It's wonderful. But if you can find someone that's, like you said, Joe Roland, that's done that knows how to do marketing, leadership, coaching, strategizing, the IT side of it, and then putting that in a portfolio, putting that on a LinkedIn at 13, because yes, 13-year-olds can do it, that's going to sell the schools and the parents even more because they haven't thought about it in that way.
I love what both of you guys have said about that, the other roles involved. So when I was doing this in my classroom, there were some kids that didn't want to play. I said, that's fine. What are you going to be doing instead? They're the ones that created the tournament tree. They're the ones that communicated with the other kids about, okay, this is what's happening here. Who, like, they were organizing. They were taking care of the behind the scenes things. And like you're saying, Bradford, and like you've said, Joe, if we can get them thinking this way and operating this way and feeling that they belong and included in grade 3, how are they going to feel in grade 6 when it's time to turn it on and these things need to happen? And let's face it, in a school, you're always going to have kids that need to learn how to organize this and kids that are going to run with this, kids that are going to run with that. And you'll have the few that are, all they're good at is the gaming, right? And you've got to build them up with the other things. But you've got a whole army behind these people. Like, this is legit. For the girls who game program, the first year we ran it, there were two. So it was perfect. We had the right amount of girls who were interested. And then there were two girls in that grade left over. And they said, we have no interest in gaming, none. And I looked at them and I said, well, when your friends leave the classroom to come and do this, what are you going to do? And they're like, oh, I don't know. I guess I'll just stay in class and be bored. Because we were pulling them out. We were getting time during the school day to work on this stuff. I said, if you want to do other things, if you want to work with me on the Twitter account and you want to look at like the marketing of this and selling this and writing things up, reflections to give to the principal and to the other people involved, I'm in. Like, I will support you there because I'm an esports coach. I can do that. And they said, really? We can still come and belong and do this? I said, yes, you're part of the team. You don't have to be gaming. You don't have to be doing the Minecraft. You can be doing all the other things that need to happen that nobody sees that you're going to make visible to others. And it was awesome. Then we had all the girls involved. So everybody was included. Everybody felt belonging. Everybody felt like they were doing something useful for them and their growth. And that was happening through esport, right? So when I tell people that, their jaw drops because all they think is, Bradford, what you said, all they see are kids playing games. Same with what you said, Joe. But this is structured. It is operating in a competitive way. It's real deal stuff. Kids are learning amazing things that they're going to use as they grow older and continue to grow and develop. It's not just sitting in front of a screen playing video games. And you're right. This needs to be, people need to be made aware. People need to see it happen. And the people you referred to are the perfect models and examples that help newbies like me learn more. So then I can start preaching to the public and I can start demonstrating what it looks like and how it operates.
You know, I want to say this as well. I think a lot of the trepidation of schools or districts to get into esports is about the unknown. Because I've never seen a high school being built and they question a football team or a basketball team or a volleyball team. It seems when a high school is built, all the equipment is already purchased for a football team, a baseball team, a soccer. Like, it's already purchased. It's like it comes with the building, right? They don't even have the team yet. It comes with the building. But you don't have a principal going around saying, Make sure if you want to have a football team at this high school, make sure you involve some football curriculum into your classroom pedagogical approach. No, I've never heard of that before, but that's what's happening with esports. If you want to bring esports in here, there better be some curriculum connection. Well, where's the basketball curriculum connection, right? It seems like you're adding these extra layers of, well, if you want this, you have to include this. It doesn't make sense to me. And the other argument that is always brought up is, well, how much is this going to cost us to start up a team? Well, you're going to need devices. You're going to need this. You're going to need some stuff. But does anybody ever say, well, how much do shoulder pads cost for our football players? How much do our helmets cost? People don't know how much it costs to maintain a football team, right? Most schools don't have a football team where they cut individuals, especially in California. If they want to play football, they're on the football team. You know, they may not play a lot, but they're on the football team. That means they have to be provided shoulder pads, helmet, and pads. And all of those devices need to be certified that they are can be used. Every year, they have to be sent to a refurbisher, certified that they can be used and that they are safe. That costs money. But does anybody ever say, well, where's this money going to come out of? It's no, we have to do this to keep our kids safe if we want to have a football team. Nobody worries about that money. But when it comes to esports, well, how are we going to get these things? So I'll tell you this. This is what I tell schools. I go, listen, do you have a CTE program? Do you have a CCR program, College Career Readiness Program? If you do, there's funding for that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of CTE, there's funding for devices. And I say, now listen, your CTE room can be used as CTE during the school day. Buy those high-end devices for your CAD software. Buy those high-end devices for your engineering software. Buy them all. But then afterwards, turn that into your esports room. Guess what? Right. Now you have the devices. Now you're not saying we're spending solely for esports. We are now buying high-end devices for CTE and for our esports team. Boom. You just did it, right? And so don't – I always say this, and this has always been my mantra since I started using EdTech in the classroom. Never let a budget stand in the way of your vision. Never. Find a way. Never let the answer of no, there's no money stand in the way of what you envision your class can be. Never let that happen. So never let budget stand in the way of what an esports team can look like. And yes, Roland, you use switches. A lot of elementary schools use switches because they have their esports game of choice is Smash Brothers, right? And it's, you know, solely on Nintendo, so you have to do it on a Switch if you can find a Switch for under $400. But in junior high and high school, the two games that I see most prevalent are Rocket League and League of Legends. Those are the two that I see the most. You don't necessarily see first-person shooters at the K-12 arena. I know in college they do. There's some Call of Duty teams and stuff, but I you'd be hard-pressed to find any school to say yes to a Call of Duty team. I think there's a couple I've heard out there, but the thing about it is this: those devices can be found, and some of these games don't require super high powered horse computers to play, right? But those devices can be found. So never let that stand in the way of creating your team. But if you never question why the football team gets funding, if you never question why the volleyball team gets funding, why are you questioning about esports being funded? If that's a vision of your school and reaching those students who don't feel connected, if that's a vision, this is something that needs to happen, and never let your budget stand in the way of your vision.
I'm going to say, Joe, because they question it, it's because it's unknown. They're unfamiliar with it. It's uncharted territory. We've had 50 plus years with a volleyball, a football, a basketball. We've had that time to, you know, poke the holes into what is this? I can only imagine what that looked like years ago when, God, can you imagine what somebody said? I want to bring football into, or soccer into school. I wonder what those questions would have been like. I mean, you can't fathom it, right? Well, now we're having to have these conversations with, when it comes to esports, computer science, STEM, it has to be justified. Okay. And I think that's that's the issue. It's unknown territory. And let's also be honest, you're going into some uncharted territory when it comes to going out into the digital space. Because once you say, I'm going to dip my toe, and I can only say this with esports. I really can't say with computer science and everything else. But once you say, I'm doing esports, like, you're opening up a Discord. If you decide to do Discord, you don't have to. But the Twitches and all of that stuff. So all of those digital citizenship practices that we preach every day, that we say on Twitter, that we say to our students, that we have in our classes, this is where it starts to get real, because now you're having to put those into practice. This is where now your students are going to become the digital citizenship leaders that you're expecting them to be, because there is no Discord EDU. There is no Twitch EDU. Like, you're going to get into a space where somebody's going to say something toxic to you. What do you do? And the quickest thing is to shut it off. But have we had those tools to train? And so I say all that to say is that it's uncharted territory. And sometimes when you're trying to do an esports program, from experience, you are a team of this person. And you're having to talk to administrators, superintendents, teachers. You're having to navigate that conversation to everybody. And sometimes when you're that team of this, you're not in charge of the budget. And so, and I'm only speaking for people. I know some of my esports people are like that. Yep. Because again, you're not in charge of that budget, and then people hold those keys to the kingdom. And so you're always on these podiums, these, what did you say, Roland? These keynotes of talking about why this is important. And you're always racing to the athletics department or whoever to say, hey, this needs to happen. That's the other issue too, Joe, is that the money sometimes is coming from CTE, it's coming from athletics, it's coming from CS, it's coming from everywhere. There is no department. And so that's the other stressor too. There is no esports department. So you're still doing all this convincing. And a lot of us in this esports space are teachers. And so we don't hold the budget. We're out there hustling to get a grant. And once we get a grant, then we can make our own moves. So I think that's what the problem is that with football, basketball, band, cheerleading, we know that pattern. There's no reason. Oh, $10,000, $50,000. We need it for that organization. Not a problem. Tell me why. Oh, we already know why. Boom, let's make it happen. Esports, wait a minute. What is this? Computer science, I'm getting the computer science thing now. I just got computer science. I have people say, I just got computer science, but now you're talking about esports. Wait a minute, let's back up. What are we doing here? And so there's a lot of convincing that's happening now. Hopefully in a few more years, we're not having to have that conversation anymore to where this is like, okay, exactly what you said, Joe. Hey, CTE, you're doing AutoCAD, you're doing Scratch, you're doing all of these things. We'll bundle it in there. And then now we're having esports programs after school, during school, but we're also doing these other programs to where this fits. So I think that's the issue. I know, Kyle, you said you want to say something too.
Yeah, and you kind of said a lot of what I was thinking already about the unknown, about how, you know, years ago, whether it was 50 years ago, 70 years ago, 100 years ago, these became things then. And I mean, I don't know if those conversations were had then or if it just kind of naturally started to ease in. Like, we're talking sports in general, football, soccer, basketball, whatever it may be. But thinking about that, though, I mean, we're 50 years removed from girls' sports being a thing. So that was something new back then. And I don't know, I wasn't around then, so I don't know what those conversations looked like. And then if you look at outside of the United States, sports are a huge part of education in the United States, up through the college level. And I know Canada, high school sports are a big thing, but college sports are not as big in Canada. And that's why you have a lot of Canadian athletes that come to American universities to continue playing sports. I mean, they have sports teams, and Roland, you can probably piggyback this and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but Canadian universities will have teams, whatever, but it's not the scholarship money and just the prestige of college athletics is not there in Canada. Well, then if you look outside of the United States or outside of North America, it's mostly just club type stuff universities across the world. So sports are just not a big part of that. And then even in schools, K-12 schools, sports are, kids play sports, obviously, but they're not necessarily sanctioned by schools. So, I mean, so that's kind of just, it's not as big of a thing. And I can see that in a few years, as more and more people, more and more schools start to embrace this concept of gaming as a sport, esports, whatever you want to call it, I think it's going to become more popular, more mainstream, like a standard quote unquote sport, you know, and I'm throwing up air quotes on that there. So it's just going to take some time. So like Bradford, you and Joe were both saying about how not worrying so much about a budget specifically for that, but just seeing how can we incorporate it using the resources we already have. But in 10 years, it's going to be something that nobody's going to blink an eye at, it, in my opinion.
You know, and I think we have to also go back to, you know, what we tell parents as coaches for quote unquote traditional sports, right? So as a football coach, and we had our parent night, I would always say, yeah, you know, we're gonna work really hard. We're gonna go over our plays. We're gonna work really hard to be a really good team and a competitive team. I go, but the skills your students will learn are being cooperative with one another, being part of a team, not feeling like they are the ones who are going to make the play, but my team is going to make the play. Being part of a group, not a single individual, showing them how to be able to communicate with one another and overcome adversity and that are important. That I would say as a football coach. As a wrestling coach, I would always say, you know, this is going to teach a student how to stand on their own. This is going to teach a student how they can't hide behind others because they're the only ones on the mat with another person. They're the ones that are going to learn how to look back and see what their mistakes were and fix those mistakes. Those are qualities of life that they're going to need to learn about on how to become a better person. I would always emphasize that in wrestling. It's not about the wrestling. It's about the character building. Why can't we emphasize that with esports, right? Because that is exactly what they do. Taking a student out of being the only person in their bedroom talking to strangers, putting them in a room with other people where they can learn to truly communicate face-to-face, where they can learn that they're not hiding behind a microphone and they have to resolve their conflicts face-to-face, that you can't trash talk without reactions from your teammates and you shouldn't trash talk your fellow teammates, right? These are things you can't learn by yourself in your bedroom because all of those communications, those are with meme people, meaning not real people in your mind. You know, they exist somewhere in the world, but as soon as you turn off the device, those people are gone. But that's not what happens in an esports room. You have to work with those individuals if you want your team to succeed. And I want to say that esports also makes regular sports better. Think about it. Mm-hmm. Look at the NFL today. Look at all of the young head coaches currently in the NFL. You have Sean McVay, Mike McDaniels, Kyle Shanahan. Did they play college ball? Did they play in the NFL? Most of them, no. Most of them got their first cut of how to be a coach. Well, Kyle Shanahan with his dad, most likely. But most people learned how to be a coach through Madden. They played Madden. They learned how to pick the right play. They learned how to pull apart a defense. They learned all the different tendencies by playing Madden. And then they went in and they said, let me see if this actually works in real life. I'm not saying that's the only reason they're good at their job, but it is a part. They learned that part of the joy of the game was not just the players, but being able to find ways to make the players successful. And that's why they're successful as head coaches. That's what we have to realize. It's about the skill building, not necessarily about the game you're playing currently. And I think that's what we have to make people understand is the skill building and the communication piece and the community building piece. All of those things are what we hope our students are enshrined with in any sport they compete with. And that's all we're trying to do with these individuals who don't feel like they belong in a football or basketball or volleyball team or a choir or a band team. We're trying to still get them that team building, communicative, community building skill that they wouldn't get just playing in their own bedroom.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And also, the school institution is a safe space. It's still a safe space where we can provide these resources, especially the esports program, where we can talk about how to conduct ourselves in this uncharted territory. Why not? I mean, Joe, you talked about the curriculum, but you just spoke it right there. Like, here's where you learn how to conduct yourselves as a human being in this space. You know, you can't do it. You can't do it in your bedroom. Yeah, you can, but here, you know, you're with a group of students and an adult facilitator to where here's how you learn how to navigate in this space. There is no book on this, but now you're with in a safe space for IT wise, the infrastructure is in place. We're going to learn how to do this together. So when you are by yourself, you have tools in place to conduct yourself in the proper way. I'm also going to say this too. We are further along than where we were 3, 4, or 5 years ago. And I'm saying that actually with pride, because think about us wanting to say, we wouldn't probably be having this conversation 4 or 5 years ago. Hey, I want to do esports. You know, I've been in those conversations where people would say that, and like, oh, we don't have time for that. That's a waste of time. But now that conversation is turning. So right now, I think we're where the administrators, the adults, they're having questions. They want to do it. They're just not sure where. They're excited. They want to see the kids thrive in this. And so now they have the questions, they have the thoughts, they have the concerns. It's not a yes, it's not a no. It's okay. I acknowledge that this is here. I acknowledge that this is important. How do I navigate through it? Let's have these conversations now. Whereas 3, 4, or 5 years ago, this would have never, we probably would have never been talking about this right now. So I think we also have to commend ourselves that we're in a space where now we're having these critical conversations, all four of us here and everybody else in digital space and physical space. We have to commit ourselves for where we are at right now and where it can go later on, because 3, 4, 5 years ago, we weren't there. We weren't having that conversation at all.
Yeah, and I think that's good where we're at and where we're going. And it takes time. It takes time for something to catch on and people to understand. But it's people like you, Bradford, right? And you, Roland, who showcase how esports is great for team building and social emotional learning and just well-being on a campus that will help push this forward. I kind of want to close really quick in saying this. I was able to help participate in an esports tournament in the Central Valley when I was working with CDW. And I was observing, I'm like, it's pretty neat, right? I mean, because it's not a boys team or a girls team, it's the esports team. And you had, you know, multiple genders playing on the same team. There were students playing in wheelchairs because they just needed to use their hands. There was a girl there who was deaf, and her interpreter was interpreting what her teammates were telling her because she had a headset on as well. And she was being, it was amazing to see everybody participate. And limitations that other sports may present were not there. And this allowed for just probably one of the best experiences that I had. But the top part was this, I was sitting next to this parent, and this parent said, I'm just so happy right now. I'm like, oh, you know, this, yeah, the tournament went on, I was going to, she goes, no, I've never seen my son smile before. I've never seen my son talk to another person his age. He's never had friends. He comes straight home. He tells me how much he feels uncomfortable at school, but he's smiling at his school. This is the greatest thing to happen to him. That's it. That's it. If that's not a reason to start a program up like this at your school, I don't know what it is. Because it allowed that student to feel that he was a part of something. And the parents, you know how we are as parents. How do you console a student who feels like they don't belong? How do you console a student who feels they can't make friends? You can't go there as a parent and tell kids, be my son's friend. That would probably be even worse, right? As a parent, you feel helpless. And so to see something like that, a parent finally see their son with a smile on their face, I guarantee you that that parent, that was the happiest day of their life, besides when their son or daughter was born. That's what esports can do for you. That's what esports can do for your campus. And that's why esports should be a viable conversation. And if anybody listening would like to contact Bradford, you see his handle there, and that it'll be, the handle will be in the notes. Same thing with Roland, myself, and Kyle. But if you want to see and ask questions about how you can start an esports tournament, what it looks like, what an esports team looks like at Q, it's my one last pitch, because this is going to air the last episode before Q happens. If you go to Spring Q, March 17th to 19th, there's going to be a giant esports arena there. We're going to have NACIF there giving presentations on what esports is and how they can help. We're going to have coaches there giving clinics on, if you're looking to start an esports program, how you as a teacher can become a coach and create a great environment for your students. We're going to have teams of students playing so you can see them participate. We're going to have a novice tournament for any teacher who wants to learn how to play. We're going to have a novice tournament where you can join in and play as an esports person with students giving tutorials on how to play the actual game. If you want to see it all in action and ask questions of the experts who are putting them on, Q in Palm Springs, 17th to 19th, is the place to go. But if you have questions now, definitely reach out to the EdTech Army. Definitely reach out to anybody on this podcast or your closest esports fanatic at your school and ask how you can help. Because esports may seem like something weird from the future, but it's something important for the now. And the more that we get administrators and higher ups to understand why it's important, just as important as all the other skills students learn in traditional sports, to get them to understand it's not about playing video games, but creating a team. Once we get that, I think the ball rolls even faster. Bradford, I think one of my favorite quotes is, "It always takes longer than you thought. But once it starts, it can happen faster than you ever imagined." And I sure hope that that is what happens with esports in these next few years. So, everyone, thank you so much for joining the roundtable today, talking about esports. Hopefully, listeners, you kind of, it piqued your interest, or you were nodding along with some of the things we were saying. And if we missed anything, please definitely reply to the EdTech Army by typing it in and then hashtag EdTech Army, or reach out to us on Twitter at SonsOfTechEDU. Until then, until next time, you know, we'll be meeting again after the great Spring Q. So hopefully we have a lot of great stories from that. But until then, if we see you at Spring Q, come up and say hello. If we don't see you, talk to us on the socials. So everybody, thanks again, and have yourselves a wonderful, wonderful day.